Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Hey, thanks so much for being with us this morning here on The Dock. Coming up in 20 minutes is Zeke's belly tattoo saying, "Feed me with a spoon, a bad sign." And in 40 minutes, Santana Moss, Washington football radio analyst, is going to join us. What an emotional victory over the weekend by Washington in the comeback over the Philadelphia Eagles. The way that right now their head coach, Ron Rivera, is battling his way through chemo as he coaches the team. The offseason of never-ending misery and nightmares and bad headlines. And yet here they are with a Week 1 win. We'll talk about that, plus the rest of the NFL, with Santana Moss right here on the DA Show coming up later on in this hour. I appreciate all the love that you guys give the show every day, especially when I hear from you on Twitter or on Instagram or an email. It always puts a smile on my face. John tweeting, "You guys are the best radio show, best sports radio show in the mornings. I don't know if I'm more entertained by the craziness that comes out of Mraz's mouth or by the way you guys clown on him. Either way, I love it. Keep it going." I appreciate thoughts like that and other emails and tweets and everything that comes down the pike from you guys, because what we attempt to do here every single morning is, to me, make you smile, make you laugh, make you think. And if we can do that, we've accomplished something. In sports radio, there is such a race to be heard, to be loudest, because there's such a cluster of voices, and it's hard to stand out amongst them. So people yell the loudest or try to be the most controversial. And to me, it's just never been something that I've liked or gravitated to. I see it happen a lot in our industry, and I'm like, that's not where I want to be. I want to be a place where you can come listen to the show and enjoy yourself for the morning. That you don't have to worry about agendas or worry about pushing certain narratives, or you don't have to worry about combat or arguments or takedowns. And that's just all over the place. You hear that a lot in sports radio, and especially in morning sports radio. I mean, what are we doing? People are waking up, hitting the snooze button a couple of times. They do not want to be assaulted by blazing hot takes and media takedowns and media feuds and politics and everything like that. So I appreciate you saying that. We're going to continue doing this. And what this has been really successful for us for 8 years here on the network and before it throughout my career, which is do a good show every single day, put your heart into it every single day, and help make people laugh, help make people smile, help make people think. And you're doing something. And that's all I really ever wanted to do, was do something that help people laugh a little bit, help people smile, because that's what I like to do. The things that I'm attracted to make me feel a little bit better inside. And there's so much sports talk. that just does not accomplish that, because there's so much ego involved that they can have that. We'll do this. And we appreciate those of you that really enjoy this. Thanks very much. So what I was saying before, this bond that we have with the listeners sometimes just astounds me. And I thank you so much for it. Dylan, who's a longtime listener to the show, is a young man, ambitious. And he said, I'm going to put together a point system for you guys and see who wins the NASCAR point race, the chase, over the course of the regular season. So, guys, are you ready? Maybe we should cue up some music here. Mraz, are you ready to know how your team of Jimmy Johnson and Kevin Harvick, Pete the Body Bilates, Joey Logano, and Kyle Busch, AB's Denny Hamlin and Ryan Newman, and mine, Clint Bowyer and Austin Dillon, teams did over the course of the regular season?
I'm ready, and just another reminder that a listener is out here doing more work than I am as far as producing the show goes.
And it's not shocking, but it is something to remember, that this research done is far more than Mraz has ever done for the show. And he did it pro bono. This is just an effort that he did because he really liked the show and wanted to contribute. So, Mraz, you should feel definite shame right now in the pit of your stomach.
When you said he gathered a point system, I did. I had this sinking feeling like, oh, here comes the email later today. What do I have to do next? I was on a high. I thought the PGP went well, and Dylan is taking my legs out from underneath me. So let's see. Maybe at least I came in first place.
So your sinking feeling is a listener did more work than me. Uh-oh, DA is going to want me to do more.
Or something I don't see coming. I'm going to get sucker punched here with something I don't see coming for the show. And I'm going to look back at Dylan and his point system and go, Newman.
So,
Ryan Newman.
So you actually are worried that a listener is going to expose you and make me realize you should do more work. And then instead of you being ambitious, like, yeah, you know what? A listener did this. I should do that. You're worried that I'm going to put more on your plate.
Well, I mean, when you lay it out like that, I guess that's the way I've laid it out. I am aware. I am aware already that this listener made me look bad. My problem is I never know where the wheels go in motion with your head. So I am just going to sit back very fearful about what the next 24 hours brings on the verge of a NASCAR point system for us being tallied, because I don't know where it goes. As I said, I just came up with a great idea for a PGP segment, and now I'm getting one-upped by a listener making a NASCAR point system for us, and I just can't win today.
Well, you can win by just being ambitious, proactive, inspired.
You know
where that actually is where you could win. If you came to me and you were like, DA, great idea. NASCAR's having this regular season. We should all have drivers. I'll create a point system and we'll track it throughout the year. That's where you definitely could win, but a listener did it.
You know where I should have won 4 minutes ago when I acknowledged how much more work this listener did, and I should have just said, yeah, I'm ready to go, DA. Let's hear the standings. That's where I should have won.
I mean, this is like you being a father and a husband. You produce as well. Anything you do is a benefit. Otherwise, we just drag you along.
Right.
Yeah. Mraz is like, my mic's on for 4 hours. Sometimes I say funny things. Sometimes I don't. Anything more than that? Come on. What more can you expect from me here?
Emotion.
Let's be honest. Once Canadian bacon's over, my worth to the show really just plummets.
So coming in last place in our point standings is yours truly, D.A., Clint Bowyer, and Austin Dillon. Clint Bowyer, because he is a Kansas guy, and I spend time in Kansas City. And Austin Dillon, because as the number three car, this is a guy that, you know, has the nostalgia associated with the Dale Earnhardt Senior car. They came in last place, 960 points, largely because Austin Dillon was a disaster this year. At Martinsville, 1 point. Talladega, 1 point. Michigan, 6 points. And Daytona, 0 points. So that absolutely killed me. So thanks for nothing, Austin Dillon. I came in last place. In third place is AB, Denny Hamlin, and Ryan Newman. Newman, because he is largely considered the smartest guy on the circuit, and I suppose that we think that AB is the smartest guy on our show. Mm. And Denny Hamlin, because he delivers, well, he's the UPS card. AB delivers consistent headlines. He came in third place with 1,048 points. Newman also kind of killed AB as well with a few really bad efforts.
Pro boner.
In second place, Pete the Body Bilates. Pete the Body comes in Joey Logano and Kyle Busch. Logano because he's looking for respect like Pete is, and Kyle Busch because Busch is routing a WWE-type character, comes in with 1,113 points, meaning Mraz's Jimmy Johnson Let's and go. Denny Hamlin, and or I'm sorry, Kevin Harvick, that team, JJ and Kevin Harvick, end up in first place with 1,265 points. So Mraz ends up winning the regular season, Pete the Body in second, AB in third, and mine, my team, in fourth. AB, we'll start with you. Any thoughts on coming in third place?
Well, I knew that Ryan Newman was going to be an issue for me just at the top of my head, never reading his name on a Monday morning that he won the previous day's NASCAR race, so I thought he was going to drag me down. I knew that Harvick had done well, so I was prepared not to win. I would have liked second place, but I'll deal with third.
Pete, how do you feel about coming in second place with your tandem with Logano and Kyle Busch?
I feel horrible, and that's it. I got to change how I view life now.
Okay. And Mraz, you want to take your victory lap here?
Yeah, and how could I not? Look, this was the most NASCAR I had watched in any given year for obvious reasons. It was the only thing on for a long period of time. I got into it a little bit. And look, like any good Disney film, I had my bumps here as far as not doing this research. But in the end, I still win because I came in first. So all's well that ends well. Uh-oh, Mraz steps in it again. Mm-hmm.
Story of your life. So that is our NASCAR challenge. And thanks so much to Dylan for compiling that. That was pretty cool of him to do so. Saquon Barkley had a rough night on Monday night against the Steelers. He averaged 0.4 of a yard per carry. 0.4 of a yard. And Saquon right now is wondering, where am I going to run behind? Because the offensive line was just dreck on Monday night and has been for all 3 years of the Dave Gettleman era and going back well before that as well. But here is our friend Tiki Barber right here on CBS Sports Radio yesterday discussing how Saquon Barkley actually is also hurting himself by not doing another level of commitment to the running back duties.
Saquon Barkley, he might not be an every down back. He cannot pass protect.
Whoa.
And it is starting to become glaring. It's probably the only issue he had to deal with coming into the NFL because he wasn't asked to do it at Penn State. And now you see him diving on the ground, not sticking his head in people's chest. It's going to be a liability because people see it now. It's on tape and it's going to come out. If you've watched him for the last couple of years, he doesn't want to block. So recognition is one, and then two, you got to go hit a dude. Saquon Barkley's a big man. He doesn't want to hit anybody. It's frustrating to watch.
When Tiki starts on this take, hearing BT basically sound like a Malaysian monkey was stealing his cell phone.
Whoa! Hey! Whoa! Whoa!
He sounded like Terry Bradshaw in that famous clip. Whoa!
Whoa! Hey! Wow!
What just happened there? It's pretty amazing.
He's such a head man.
Wow. Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. There goes my cell phone. Is that a monkey cell phone?
Whoa.
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 So, Mraz, I will put this at your feet. Is Tiki right? Is Saquon Barkley the number two pick in the draft a couple of years ago, largely considered one of the best running backs in football, actually not a three down back because you can't trust him in block situations?
I will take Bradley.
I think that's a little extreme from Tiki, but then again, I'm the same guy who called him Kajana Carter with big thighs.
Seriously, you've taken him down worse than that.
Right, so here's the bit. Saquon Barkley is overrated at every phase of his game. Now, he had a rough night pass blocking, but I could also tell you the big pass to Darius Slayton, he stepped up and he had a huge, huge block at that point. So he's not an utter disaster pass blocking, but to Tiki's point, Tiki Barber had to learn early in his career with the New York Giants and get stronger to be on the field, to make all those plays on third down, to be able to help in pass protection. That's part of being a complete running back in the NFL. And this problem doesn't happen with Ezekiel Elliott. It doesn't happen with Aaron Jones with the Packers. Heck, it doesn't even happen with Christian McCaffrey, who's been known as a little bit of a lighter guy with Carolina. Saquon Barkley, it's not his fault that the offensive line stinks, but if you're a tight end and you're a running back and your offensive line's bad, you need to also do anything you can to help that unit. And Saquon Barkley pitter-pattering when he gets the ball and then whiffing on blocks left and right, which he did still have done a bunch, by year three, it's a problem. It's a major problem because if you're the New York Giants and you have enough issues getting talent in there and turning this roster over, the guys who are supposed to be the superstars on the team need to perform in every single phase of the game. And Saquon Barkley is not doing that, which again just goes back to the same thing we've beaten like a drum. The Giants were not in a position to be drafting a running back second overall in the draft. They had enough other problems. Imagine they had taken Quentin Nelson in that spot and then maybe had a freaking Benny Snell on the team on Monday night. Maybe the situation would be a little bit different. So I don't think Tiki's totally out of bounds. I think maybe a little harsh, but maybe that's the kind of wake-up call a guy like Saquon Barkley needs, is to see a former great at his position on that franchise tell you, you're not getting this done, dude. And maybe it's being told to him behind the scenes, but now publicly, all eyes are going to be on Saquon Barkley doing that, and it's put up or shut up time. You're the second overall pick. Start performing.
This has become very big news. The New York areas might imagine Tiki Barber calling out a current Giants star and running back for not doing the little things. But before you think that this is just Tiki with sour milk, and this goes back to when he called out Eli Manning in 2007, and the Giants kind of rallied around that, Tiki has not been unfair in Giants criticism in a long, long time. And he has gone back and said, the things about Eli, I was trying to kind of, make my own career in broadcasting. I wanted to separate myself from the organization. I wanted to show that I was unbiased. He has not been a guy that just pulls a pin in a decade and throws it at the Giants. What he says about the Giants is oftentimes very fair. And in some ways, he usually roots for the Giants because he's been embraced once again by the organization and I think by the fans in general as well. So he's a guy that is very careful of just pulling a pin and throwing it. And I think for him to say that is really significant because he's not a guy that's just going to spit hot takes of this stuff. And I think he's right. And I think, as you said, Mraz, this is a compounded problem. The New York Giants were not in a position a couple of years ago to draft a running back number two overall. They had an entire roster to fix. An entire roster to fix, and they chose a running back. That means they ignored the guys that have to block for that running back, the guy that has to throw to that running back, the guys on defense that have to give the running back back the football, and everything in between. A running back in today's NFL is not Earl Campbell. It's not Walter Payton. It's not Tony Dorsett. It's not O.J. Simpson. Where in the 1970s and 1980s, you can win games with Dieter Brock at quarterback because Eric Dickerson runs for 2,000 yards. That does not happen anymore. You can't do it anymore. And so to assume that you could draft Saquon Barkley and that he is just simply going to grow into being a all-around star and somehow help you win games when nothing around you is working was ridiculous. It was always ridiculous. And for Saquon, he's got limitations. That offensive line's terrible, and Evan Engram can't block as well at tight end. And so then that leaves Daniel Jones more exposed. And Daniel Jones, as a rookie or a second-year quarterback the last 2 years, is still hurried in decision-making and isn't completely fluid. It doesn't go through all the progressions correctly. Tries to do too much sometimes. Turn the football over a lot. And so Saquon Barkley is A, being exposed by his offensive line with blitzing linebackers coming through, and B, not being helped out by his tight end who doesn't like to block as well, and three, C, also not being helped out by a quarterback that if he has pressure is going to make bad decisions. So it puts a highlight on when Saquon doesn't do the job perfectly well. But Saquon also doesn't love doing that job. And as Tiki said, at Penn State, he wasn't asked to do that job because rarely are stars at running back in college asked to stay in and pass protect because they're stars in college and that's how they got recruited there. So these guys, like Saquon, don't do it often, don't like to do it. There's no glory in doing it. And for a bad football team, it feels like you're probably pushing a boulder up a hill. And Tiki is absolutely right here that for this team right now, everybody's got to do the little things for them to win any games. Everybody. Jones has to do the little things. The offensive line has to. The defensive line has to. The secondary has to. And Saquon Barkley has to. And if Saquon's the star of the team, which he is, then not doing the little things, there's a huge spotlight on it. And this is what happens when in today's NFL, you assume your running back can bail you out of being a bad football team. He can't. And that's why I wouldn't spend money on a running back, and I wouldn't draft a running back high unless it was the final piece of the puzzle. Because ultimately, a high pick on a running back or spending money on a running back is a luxury that bad teams can't afford. Witness Le'Veon Bell, witness Saquon Barkley, two teams, same town, big expectations, and both teams still stink. When we come back here on the show, here's a high-end running back that went to a good team and paid dividends, but also has been a head-scratcher, and they haven't even been to an NFC Championship game with him. Ezekiel Elliott, we'll discuss next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This is CBS. It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Watch the show every single morning. You can watch inside the radio.com app. You can watch on any device at watchda.com. No sign up, no cable provider, no subscription fee needed. Watch for free anywhere at watchda.com on your phone as well. And you can watch us on Twitch simply by going to the CBS Sports Radio channel on Twitch. Our poll question today is Ezekiel Elliott's belly tattoo. He got a belly tattoo the other day that says, "Feed me with a spoon." Now, this is Zeke's slogan, personal mantra. Whenever he has a big run or a touchdown, he does that pantomime of eating something with a spoon or a fork. I don't know. Maybe it's like a big wooden spoon. And he got this as a tattoo on his belly. On his belly. Because perfect place to have a feed me tattoo. So we are asking you guys today, when Zeke is middle-aged, will he regret the belly tattoo? That is today's poll question. You can vote at CBS Sports Radio on Twitter, at CBS Sports Radio. Advanced analytics on this coming up here later on in the show. Mraz, you are obviously our proudest member of Chubbo Nation, and sure, you consider yourself the Thictator, the Sultan of Sodium, the Prince of Puffiness, the Kaiser of Calories.
Yes.
And you have a tattoo. Your tattoo is a New York Giants logo on your left bicep, which you got the night before Super Bowl 42. That was the first win over the Patriots, the undefeated Patriots in 2007, February 2008. You do not have any other tattoos that I know of. I haven't seen a tramp stamp since I've seen you last. But again, there was no block party this year, so I don't know. Maybe you got one over the summer. Would you ever get a belly tattoo?
No, but not for look, more for pain, which Zeke alluded to. I don't mind a belly tattoo in general because your belly is probably life's canvas, if you will. I mean, that is when your shirt is off at the beach, you can see it and others can enjoy it. See, I never understood the back tattoo because you're never really looking at it. It's just for others. The leg is fine, but you could hide it in pants and stuff. I'm a big shirt off guy anyway. I'm team overweight. Don't be afraid to make it shake as far as being outside. So I think it's a great canvas to have something. As a matter of fact, I don't think it's utilized enough, and I do give Zeke credit here. It's just a matter of what you should get on your belly.
Well, I would say that a guy that feels like he's already battling weight issues at running back, it's probably a bad strategic move that he is putting a feed me with a spoon on his protruding belly.
See, here's where I actually have given this way more thought than I probably should have. I like this tattoo because it serves two purposes. When you see it now, you know Zeke, the running back, talks about feeding him. That's like his, give me the ball, I'm ripped, I'm going to feed him. If he does retire and gain 60 pounds and is on the trajectory of Bogish, and he takes his shirt off at the beach and it says feed me and it's his big old belly, you're going to laugh because it meant, oh, yeah, yeah, look, he really got fed. He understands he's fat, and that's why he got the feed me tattoo if you're not aware of this now. So I think feed me, from personally Zeke's experience, is the perfect belly tattoo because it serves a purpose now and it will be a good conversation piece when he's overweight in 20 years.
So it works on two levels for you. I think that it's going to look really bad when he inevitably is overweight. This is going to be a guy that balloons up. You know it. And I think he's just going to look really sloppy when he's out of the beach or he's wearing a tight shirt or whatever. And he's got this giant Buddha belly and the tattoo says, feed me with a spoon. I mean, you might as well put a spaghetti and meatballs next to it as well. I think it's going to look really, really sloppy.
I understand that, but I think, see, I think it's funny. Tattoos are allowed to be funny and you're allowed to laugh. If you're fat and it says, feed me on your stomach or husky, I think that's great. I really do. I mean, what else should you put? Diet and exercise on your stomach and it's hanging out? Wouldn't that be more embarrassing? It's a canvas for yourself. I think feed me's great. And I think when he gains all the weight, it's even going to make the tattoo better.
AB, do you think that he will regret having this in about 20 years?
Well, part of me thinks Zeke regrets nothing. So even if he's 400 pounds and that's all stretched out and is even not even funny, I don't think he's going to regret it. But I'm also, in general, I think 99% of tattoos are regrettable. I just don't understand them at all. Yeah. So this one makes maybe even less sense because it's also like his personal brand, which bothers me. It's like Brady getting TB12 put somewhere on his body. So that bothers me as well. It's not something that I would not do it.
Yeah. What do you think is worse? This feed me with a spoon on Ezekiel Elliott's belly or that Phillies fan that has the Philadelphia fanatic, the Philly fanatic's nose around his belly button, the snout of the fanatic.
Again, see, that guy used his belly as life's canvas.
Life's canvas, right.
And it did tie in well
if
to have
you will.
The snout and the belly button. I think that guy was that guy's more of a pig because he turned it into the Liberty Bell here, Rocky running up the steps here. It became basically graffiti for the city of Philadelphia. But if that was a standalone Philly fanatic and not everything else that went with it, I think that'd be a great tattoo. He went overboard with everything else.
Was Brock's tattoos or Ward's tattoos? They both had sleeves of tattoos. Were either one of them unprofessional in your mind, Mraz?
No, I'm not a tattoos or unprofessional guy, but I just don't think they looked nearly as good as those two guys think they did. I do think you reach a point in time with tattoos when they go all the way up your arm and stuff where you think you're radical and cool and, yeah, I went on the road as a band dude or I'm so Philly, I'm going to eat my skull, dude. Like, oh, yeah, I'm so cool because look at all my tats that, like, in the end, you kind of look ridiculous. I mean, you have tattoos all the way up your arm. They're down your back. They're up your butt. I mean, enough.
That was a weird accent that you did about being cool. I feel very cool. Like suddenly you turn into like some type of Swedish professor. I feel very cool.
It's just, I know those guys and they're good dudes. I love them. But the tattoos become, you see somebody with a full sleeve. It's like, why? Why did you need the rose wrapped around Tarzan? Then it comes down to the vine and now there's a Viking with a pirate ship. I don't know what the heck's going on. People get ridiculous.
I want the vine into the Viking ship. That's what I'm looking for.
A Viking on a pirate ship. Because we're mixing metaphors now.
Vikings, pirates.
You would definitely be, by the way, Sean, you would definitely be the guy that got like some kind of foreign language thing written on your body and it would be wrong. Like you thought it said like wisdom. It really said like cheese whiz.
My wife did that. My wife got a Chinese symbol that she forgot what it meant because she had to get it when she was a teenager and then got it covered up by something where the tattoo artist misspelled something. So, and she has to live with that for the rest of her life.
Sounds like the valedictorian of your high school.
Right. It's supposed to say let's fly away. It says Lels fly away. They forgot to cross the T. And that's covering a symbol in which she forgot what it meant. So that's a lesson for tattoos.
So she's made three bad choices. You and right. Two tattoos.
Right. And you can make the case adopting Eli was a bad one, too.
AB has our headline this morning. Bogues, what do we got?
D.A. Tiger Woods just teed off at the U.S. Open at Winged Foot, just north of New York City. Tiger playing with Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa. Tiger parred his first hole. Thomas hit a birdie on that one. Morikawa is plus one after that first hole. Tyrell Hatton has the lead. He's minus two through two. Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau have afternoon tea times. California and Oregon officials have paved the way for Pac-12 football to take the field this fall. Games apparently were always allowed, but practices would have been too limited by local restrictions. But at least in California, those protocols have been lifted now as well. A Pac-12 season could start in late October or early November. But again, no decision has been made yet. The conference's next meeting is tomorrow. Men's and women's college basketball, given a November 25th start date, no exhibitions or scrimmages are allowed before them. From the NFL, week two kicks off with the Browns hosting the Bengals. Charles Davis told us yesterday the Browns struggled to get Odell Beckham Jr. the ball early Sunday in Baltimore. Baker Mayfield tries to explain.
We had a couple plays for him early on, and the Ravens did a good job of taking that away. So we had to go through the reads and get the ball in other guys' hands. So it's just when it comes to game time, yeah, you can practice, and you might have a certain look all week in practice, but then come game time, they might show you a different thing and you got to react and play.
So they will try to not be terrible tonight. Again, in Cleveland, it's the Browns and the Bengals, 8:20 Eastern. We joke, but maybe the Yankees don't lose again. For now, it's a 7-game streak after a second rout of the Blue Jays in as many nights. 13-2 this time, behind three homers from Kyle
Higashioka, the home run stroker.
The only bad news is Aaron Judge returned from the IL last night and went 0-for-4 with 3 Ks.
Whoa.
The Twins avoid a sweep 5-1 at the White Sox. They're now 2 games behind Chicago in the AL Central. And the Dodgers clinched a playoff spot with their 7-5 win in the afternoon in San Diego. MLS last night, some brotherly love for the Portland Timbers.
Diego Chara looking to get it away for his brother Jimmy. Running at Marie, running him out. Marie, Jimmy Chara has scored his first goal for the Portland Timbers.
That's John Strong, FS1. Jimmy Chara scoring off a feed from brother Diego. Zdeno cool. Chara was a scratch last night. It's the sixth time in MLS history that brothers have connected for a goal, but their Timbers had to settle for a 1-1 draw with San Jose. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. When we come back, Santana Moss is going to join us. Former NFL wide receiver, now a member of the Washington Football Radio Network, on the emotional win for D.C. last weekend and around the NFL. D.A., CBS Sports Radio.
It's going to be a good day with D.A.
Hey, how's it going, D.A.? Thanks for making the driving traffic so easy. Show's great.
I feel good, and I'm doing well.
D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
41 minutes past the hour. Joining us here on the show to discuss an emotional Week 1 victory in Washington is a man who played 14 seasons in the NFL, 10 of which with Washington. Made the Pro Bowl in 2005. Caught more than 7,000 yards worth of passes, nearly 50 touchdowns in his career. He's a member of the Washington Football Team Radio Network. Santana Moss joining us this morning on the show. Santana, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us. Take us inside the locker room at halftime of last week. The Washington team was facing an uphill battle against a division rival. And you had a young quarterback, apparently, in Dwayne Haskins that had an emotional speech. You had a head coach in Ron Rivera getting an IV. What was it like in there?
Well, I wish I was in there. But from what I've heard, man, you know, just a young guy stepped up and basically told the team, like, you know, this is our home. You know, last year, you know, we was them at their home, and they found a way to turn things around, you know. So basically he just tried to give, you know, the team – a little bit of what they needed at the time. I think one of the things that we can look at right now with this season, there's going to be so much going on in these first few weeks. I'm not trying to be too high or too low on some of the things that I see, because to me, watching these games, it's almost like watching a team have to go out there and play the preseason but leaving the starters in for the entire game. So it was great to see those guys respond the way they did. It was great to see them get a win. It was especially great, you know, to see them get a win, dealing with the circumstances and how they started the game. But at the same time, I'm just hoping that they can be consistently with that kind of play, and we can talk a little more about that later on during the season.
What about the challenge that faces Ron Rivera this year of not only walking into a rebuild situation, but also doing it with health complications and dealing with chemo treatments? How much of a challenge is that, and what does that say about him that he's willing to coach through it?
I mean, one of the things that's said by him is basically what we all understood from day one with him. You know, he's a tough guy. You know, I'm pretty sure just from, you know, his playing years to his coaching years to now, leading up to him being a coach here in Washington, you know, proved that, you know, we didn't have to go into the season the way we've gone into it with him to prove that. He's taken everything under consideration, dealing with the simple facts of him, you know, dealing with that health matter and also with all the other things, the obstacles that he had to deal with since being the Washington football head coach. But one of the things that you can watch and gives you hope, high hope about a coach like Ron Rivera is watching how his team plays. And I've seen that when I was playing against him when he was in Carolina. And that's to me more gratifying than anything. It shows the team shows you definitely who's coaching them. And the way they fought and the way they played, that shows you how tough Ron Rivera is because he has a team with the same mentality.
Santana Moss joins us this morning on the show, a member of the Washington Football Radio Network. I want to ask you about being a star wide receiver and not being part of the offense because Odell Beckham's dealing with something in Cleveland. He was targeted 10 times on Sunday, but only had 3 catches for 22 yards. And it feels like him and Baker Mayfield are definitely not on the same page. And their head coach, Kevin Stefanski, alluded to that by saying, we got to get to the bottom of this. What do you think Odell is feeling, and what does it mean when you're targeted 10 times but only come away with 3 catches for 22 yards?
I would say this. I've been a number one receiver for a long time throughout my 14 years career, and if I got 10 targets, trust me, I would have had a great outing. I know what it feels like to not be in the offense when you can do so much for an offense. This day and age, the game is a lot different. When I was playing, we ran the ball so much to where, you know, it used to be mind-blowing to me how I only could get 3 or 4 attempts a game. But I made do with what I had. I think a lot now, these guys at the wide receiver position, with the way the game is set up, they need the ball. They need especially a guy like Odell Beckham. We've seen how he played when he was in New York, you know, with Eli. And one of the things I can say about that, being in those shoes before, I never wanted things forced. I want the ball to come in the flow of the game. Because when things are forced, you have an outing like Odell had the other day. You have drops. You have 3 catches. You don't really be effective in the offense. So I believe that regardless of what you have in Odell, you have to establish something fluent enough with the offense before you start trying to feed the stars, trying to feed the guys who you consider your playmakers. I do believe he needs the ball. I do believe he needs some of those big chunks here and there because he can make a difference. But don't force it because the team's coming to the game knowing that Odell's going to be effective. So they set up their defense, a structure to make sure that they prevent that. So if it's not there, don't, you know, go to the next guy. And I think that's the way you have to play the game. Trust me, I've been in those shoes. And I just always say, if I didn't have a good game but we won, I was okay because I didn't want things forced. I wanted the ball thrown to me when I was open.
So that's really interesting. As you said, if you had 3 or 4 targets a game, you made the most of those targets. If yes. Odell's getting 10 targets a game, is he doing something wrong if he's only got 3 catches for 22 yards?
No, not necessarily, because you got to understand something. I've had a bunch of quarterbacks, too, and it's been plenty of games where I've had more targets and didn't have the catches to add up with it. And it's all depending on how that quarterback getting the ball to you now. Some of those balls, not in his hands, he can't do nothing about it. You know, you can throw the ball at me 30 times, and if I come up with 5 catches and have 100-something yards, you're going to say, well, oh, man, he should have had 20. You know, the ball has to, you know, touch me for you to say that I'm the problem. I should have had the ball, or I should have made more plays. So you have to look at how those balls are being thrown, or are they in double coverage? Are they, you know, just thrown in his direction? All that stuff comes into play.
Let me ask you about the personal relationship between a quarterback and a wide receiver. Does it matter? You played with a lot of quarterbacks. Did it matter guys trusted one another or had friendships in terms of how it produced on the field?
Trust, yes. Friendship, no. You know, it doesn't matter in that locker room totally if any of those guys are friends. You know, when you're working, when you're at your job, everyone's there for, you know, one job, you know, to make sure that we can do our best to make sure that this company runs well. and we do the best for our company. So that's the same way in the NFL locker room. You know, we all here with one common goal, which is to win a championship. Whether we like each other or not, as long as we go out here and do what's assigned to us, then we should have a chance to do that. I played with so many quarterbacks, I barely knew their girlfriend's name or their kid's name. But they can trust and know that they had a guy in me that was going to go out there and do my job well. So, therefore, I trust in them to get me the ball because they know that of me, the way I work, the way I come to work, and the way I handle my business. That's all that's needed to be done. And that's all the kind of – that's the only thing that I believe players need when it comes to having enough communication, when it comes to friendships or not. You don't really need friends to go out there and work efficiently together.
Santana Moss joins us this morning on the show. So that's super interesting. Do you think that maybe that's the disconnect, that right now Odell and Baker Mayfield don't have a mutual trust with one another?
I don't really think it's – I'm not sure. I'm not there. You know what I mean? I don't want to say that they don't have the trust because, to me, I believe that Baker Mayfield thinks highly of Odell. You know, he said it plenty of times. And to me, I believe that they're trying to do things to make sure Odell's happy. But – that's not going to make the offense successful. I think Odell has to be Odell, but in the flow of the game. You know, you can't just force it because he's Odell Beckham. Make sure that you can get the matchups offensively, have that offensive coordinator be creative enough to make sure when Odell gets that single coverage matchup or that matchup when that defense is sleeping, give him the ball. Now, that's easy to be said than done, but if you want to get a guy like Odell started, you give him a couple of balls early, where there's a slip screen here, a slant here, a hitch here, and the best coverage that they've given you, and I allow them to get in the flow like that. But I don't see you forcing a guy, you know, the ball and not thinking about your offense as a whole. I think you have to establish the run and the pass. And with all that being said, you have a guy on the other side in Landry that, you know, we don't talk about that much, and he's going out there and catching 5 or 6 catches a game and doing it well, and we see nothing about that. Well, we look at Odell because we saw how powered and the style of play that he showed you in New York. I think also you have to look at the quarterback. You know, people take for granted what a quarterback does for a receiver. I don't, because I knew I had plenty of them, and I remember the years when I didn't have great seasons that I considered great seasons because the quarterback wasn't that kind of quarterback to know to come to me at the right time. So I think that's something that we have to pay attention also, you know, it's Baker Mayfield, that kind of quarterback that's going to make an Odell Beckham.
Santana Moss joins us from the Washington Football Radio Network. Excellent stuff. Final question, Santana. Everybody's talking about Tom Brady's lack of production on Sunday. Did you think he looked old on Sunday?
No, it's preseason. That's the first preseason game. I mean, that's how we have to look at it, you know, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I laugh nowadays because I wouldn't want to play right now today's game. It's so much criticism coming from the different, you know, shows that's on the TV, the radio outlets. You know, when I played, you know, I didn't want to hear none of that stuff. I didn't want to see none of that stuff. Now, being an analyst, I have to watch some of this stuff because I like to watch it and just hear about different teams. And I kind of watch it also just to study and see how other guys do their job that I'm doing. But when I hear some of this stuff, man, let these guys play. But I understand because we have to talk also. That's our job. We have to talk about some of these things. And, you know, it's good TV and it's good radio. But trust me, Tom Brady is Tom Brady. He's in an entire new offense with a whole heap of new weapons. This is the first preseason game. They didn't have an offseason. They didn't have nothing. So the little things that he did do during a quarantine time when they weren't supposed to, that's not going to get those guys caught up and be hitting on all cylinders come week one. And to me, like I said, I look at all these games this past weekend like the first preseason game. After 4 games, that's when the team starts settling down, knowing what they have, and then you'll see things rolling a little differently.
Santana Moss, Washington Football Team's radio network. He's part of it. They won on week one. He was a Pro Bowler. He caught nearly 8,000 yards worth of footballs in his 14-season decorated career. Great stuff this morning on the show. Santana, this was fantastic, man. Thank you so much for doing it. Best of luck this weekend on the Washington broadcast, and hopefully we'll catch up again.
No doubt, man. Thank you, guys. Anytime. Give me a holler.
Got it. I appreciate it. Very, very good. Excellent stuff. Santana Moss, excellent, excellent stuff. Well, the Odell dynamic on Washington and Ron Rivera, on how week one is basically the preseason. Really, really good stuff. He was awesome. Tremendous. Santana Moss this morning on the show. That interview, if you want to check it out, if you came in late, want to hear the entirety of it, it'll be podcastable today on all the places that our podcasts are downloaded. Awesome. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227 or on Twitter, DA on CBS. So on that point about Tom Brady, Bruce Arians on Monday called out Brady for making mistakes. People took that and said, uh-oh, you can't call out Tom Brady. Brett Favre said, you're barking up the wrong tree. Don't do that. Well, Bruce Arians responded to the people that said you shouldn't do it. We'll talk about what Arians' response was next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.